Good evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers talking to you at my favorite time during the week. And I brought along one of my favorite people.
Good evening, Carolyn. Good evening, everyone. This is Richard.
I'm so glad you came, Richard. You came to the party and answered the invitation.
I did. That's hopefully marvelous. Our guest does, too.
And if you get our emails, you would know that tonight we are going to have our discussion with John the Baptist. And one of the reasons why we chose John the Baptist, first of all, one of the listeners wrote in and asked that we have him as a guest. And after chatting with him, he tells us that there are similarities between our time and his time. So that might be interesting in hearing. How does he see the similarities in the two times with one another? And if you know our work, you know that when Richard connects with our guest and describes the energies, you might be able to pick them up if you, first of all, in your mind's eye, see a picture of what you think John the Baptist would have looked like, and then go to your heart center and enjoy what Richard is enjoying. So, Richard, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Enjoying is a good word because, man, is he sending me some energy.
What kind of energy?
Well, it's a very, very loving energy, very heart-centered, very clear, pure love energy. There's very little else going on but that love, a great clarity, a great directness, a simplicity, but it's not a simple experience, you might say. But it's very, as I say, very central, very heart-centered, very powerful.
That sounds almost wonderful.
Almost a simplicity, a beguiling simplicity to it, but very, very strong.
Mm.
Quite interesting. But he sure turned the volume up as I connected with him. He said he was going to send lots of energy when I connected with him at the beginning of the radio show. Man, did he do exactly that.
Let me ask you something with regards to that. This energy that he is sending to you, is it possible that our listening audience can pick up on it?
I'm sure it is.
There you go, folks. Get your radars out for this love energy that John the Baptist is sending.
Very. It's wonderful. I could sit here all night in this.
Yeah, love does make the world go round, doesn't it?
Indeed.
And Dr. Presser, does John the Baptist have a message for us tonight?
Let's see. It'll be a short show if he doesn't.
Well, we'd find something to talk about.
It is my pleasure to join you tonight, and indeed it is an invitation that I have long awaited, because I know that you and many of your listeners have a connection to the time considered to be the time of Yeshua, though indeed it could be considered the time of the Essenes also, because so many of your listeners were incarnated as Essenes at that time, and many of them not only knew Yeshua but also knew me. So there is quite a connection between many of your listening audience and me from that time. So it is a great pleasure to, you might say, reconnect with all of you in this manner. And I do want to begin my message to you by talking a little about that time. It is recognized that, firstly, there was prophecy which said that there would be one who came forth to announce the, you might say, great master, great leader who was to come. And in a sense, that was the core element of my role. And Yeshua and I had some powerful connections. Firstly, we were both Essenes. We were both brought up in those traditions, those powerful esoteric traditions that taught so much of the mystical and metaphysical and esoteric traditions from across the globe. They were gathered together, you might say, within the Essene group in so many ways to have those skills and abilities and understandings in place to provide a framework for the young Yeshua as he began his journey. But he and I had more connections than just that, because firstly, in that lifetime, we were cousins, as many of you well know. But also, there was a deeper connection, and that is we were or are both aspects that came forth from Marietta. And so I came forth, you might say, to, in a sense, prepare or lay the groundwork for Yeshua to come forth. And this was not just by way of announcement, but indeed I was undertaking key energetic work and indeed key, you might say, teachings and preaching to establish a base, you might say, upon which Yeshua could then step forth and do his work. So there were many threads to our connection. And of course, it was something which was set up before we came, agreed before we came, and understood by both of us, the depth of those connections well before the unfolding of his and my missions. So we were indeed very close, and indeed still are very close. And as I said, we share that monad connection. And some understand this, but many do not understand the depth of the connection that we have. And as you will appreciate, whilst it was a challenging time to be on earth, because most people were very poor, most people struggled to simply survive in that difficult time. It was also a very precious and special time because, as I mentioned, the Essenes were present and had many great skills that they shared with Yeshua and I from a very young age. And so to be part of that community and to then take those teachings and open them up in our own personal ways, which differed quite significantly in terms of the paths that Yeshua and I walked. But they were both very grounded in those fundamental Essene teachings. So in that way, it was a very precious and special time to be on the planet, to be part of that extraordinary community that was set up, you might say, to support and provide that base for, as I said, Yeshua, but also, in fact, for me and others to step forth upon, including Mary Magdalene and Mother Mary and so on. So that was, in a way, a special time. We also understood that it was, in its own way, a time of preparation for your time, but also it was one of those times that you might consider to be an attempt at a golden age, an attempt in its own way to bring forth what you are all here to bring forth in your time. In a sense, we knew it was very unlikely for many reasons, but it was one of those times when all of the forces were gathered to make that attempt, but more importantly, to put in place many of the foundation stones, you might say, for what is unfolding in your time. So we understood these things. We understood that it was, on one level, an attempt at a golden age, though we really understood it would not unfold. But we certainly also understood that the work that we were focused upon, particularly the work of Yeshua and Mary Magdalene, was, although it was about the teachings of that time, it was even more about the preparation for your time. So this was well understood. And so I do see many parallels between the time in which we lived and also the time in which you are living. Both are times of great oppression. In our time, the oppression was more obvious to all, whereas in your time, if you live in what you might say one of the countries like the United States or Canada or the other primary English-speaking countries in particular, or Western Europe, that you might say oppression is not so obvious. But if you live in other countries in the world, that oppression is indeed very obvious, because countries are being decimated, their cultures and their standards of living are being destroyed by this powerful American war machine and all that goes with it. But really, in a sense, they are simply serving the same forces, in a sense, as those who were driving the oppression in our time. These things are not well understood. And so I mention it without wishing to open it too far in this conversation. But the forces of oppression really are reflecting the forces of the dark in the world, and in a sense have been all of the time since the fall in Atlantis, and indeed somewhat prior to. So there are those threads in common. The other one that I mentioned is this, you might say, timing of things. You see, the reason we came forth at that time was it was a special moment. It was energetically powerful, energetically important. It was no accident that we came forth at that time to do that key work, when it was a moment of possibility of a golden age, because that possibility enabled the flowering of the Essenes and really enabled the flowering of the skills and abilities that Yeshua and I and Mary Magdalene in particular displayed, though indeed many of the Essenes displayed quite extraordinary skills. And these things were made possible by the energies that were present on the planet at that time, just as there are extraordinary energies even more so present upon planet in your time. So there were parallels, you might say. And having participated in that time and undertaken my key role, you might say, even though my demise was less than ideal, you might consider, I know that I completed my key work in terms of building a platform for Yeshua and then undertaking the work that saw him step forth into the world. And so I remember that time with fondness, and I am reconciled, you might say, with my demise, because we completed the work that we needed to undertake. And indeed, I know that despite the challenges and difficulties that many of you listening to this program are experiencing, I know that you will also succeed. It seems impossible at times. The struggles that so many of you are going through on so many different levels, whether it is health issues, whether it is financial issues, whether it is both, whether it is simply the impact of the aging process on your physical form, whether it be your awareness of what is going on in the world and how challenging and difficult that is for so many. It can seem so impossible, and yet it is not, my friends. You will come through this. You will complete what you are there to complete. So be at peace with this. Trust this truth and know that you will succeed with what you are there to do. It will all unfold as has been planned and intended. Trust this, dear ones, because just as we succeeded in the key things we needed to do, despite the challenges and difficulties and my early demise, and indeed, in a sense, Yeshua's early demise, though not on the cross, as most of you would know. So too, as we succeeded, you will succeed. And I want you to trust this and keep stepping in that knowledge. And so it is.
Thank you. Considering, if I remember my Bible stories, it told us that you spent a lot of time in the desert. Would you give us a little background about that? Why did you spend so much time in the desert away from people?
I chose a path that was, you might say, a very austere path. There were many traditions within the Essene community, some more austere than others. And so, for a variety of reasons, I chose to spend quite a lot of time in, you might say, private meditation, time spent alone. And indeed, this was not so unusual amongst the Essene community. And also, I ate a very austere diet, as some of the records show. I ate a very austere diet, including some forms of insects and a very limited amount of vegetables and so on. So it was a very narrow diet that I ate. So I lived a very, as I said, austere lifestyle. But it was not as extreme from within the Essene context as you might imagine. There is that story of Yeshua spending 40 days in the desert and supposedly being challenged. But really, it was not unusual for him to commune, you might say, alone in such a manner also. And also he communed with his disciples as a group away from a community in the desert. So this was not such an unusual thing to do from within the context of the Essene community. We understood how to protect our bodies. We understood how to withstand those conditions because we were trained for it from a very young age. So it sounds bizarre as you examine it from your Western context where you don't have the trainings or the understandings to do these things. But it was not so strange when viewed from, as I say, the Essene context.
Thank you. Richard spoke of this great love energy that you were showering upon him and perhaps others picked it up. Can you give us some thoughts as to how people can be more loving? What's behind that? so that they can accumulate this love energy also?
Firstly, the power of the love energy that I was sending to Richard arises to an extent because of who I am. Being an aspect of Marietta allows me ready access to powerful love energy. But in truth, anyone can open up the sense of love within their heart center. It is simply a matter of intending to do so. Go into meditation and intend to bring forth the love energy that is already in your heart center. Open this up and allow it to be expressed. And do not allow all of the things you've taken to be true about yourself as you've journeyed through your life to demean this, to lessen it, but simply accept the truth that you are made from love, as everything is. Accept this truth and connect with that powerful love energy that you hold in your heart center. Open it up, expand it, surround yourself with it, and send it out into the world. Anyone can do this. It is a simple and powerful process, and it is a beautiful process because it is a gift for yourself and it is a gift to everyone else in your life.
Thank you for that instruction. That is beautiful. Before our show, one of our listeners sent us an email, and it was about something that was in the Templars' possession, which, according to traditions, the Templars revered and held in their possession a severed head. Can you give us some background about that, what that was and the purpose of it?
There are many stories about the Templars, some of which are accurate and some are not. And I will say that they actually did have in their possession my severed head. It sounds bizarre, but it is true. And it was valued to them because they understood who I was. They understood that I was an aspect of Marietta as Yeshua was. And they understood that the world in general did not understand the truth of my relationship with Yeshua and how I had come forth in that way and been willing to act in a manner which led to my demise, because I stood in the truth of what I knew and understood and what I was there to do. And so they understood that commitment that I had made, a willingness to give up my life for what I knew to be true, what I knew was required. And they too stood in a similar position. And so it was, you might say, a quirk of fate that this relic, which truly is what it was, a relic, came into their possession. And it became a symbol that was important to them for the reasons I described. They understood who I was. They understood that I was willing to do what it took to fulfill my role and was willing to sacrifice my life to do so. And the Templars stood in a very similar place. And so this is the connection. They also understood their connection to the Essenes because of who and what they were. So there are threads, you might say, that connected them to me and, of course, to Yeshua and Mary Magdalene, because they understood the work that they were doing also. So there were many connections here. And there is some truth to the story, as I say.
Thank you for being so forthcoming about these particular facts. And as the Cathars were, shall we say, running away from the northern knights, did the Templars gather all of these relics and take them to the last holdout? I'm trying to think what...
Montsegur.
Montsegur, right. Did they take all of that to Montsegur?
There were relics that were held by the Cathars. And indeed, there were Templars present at Montsegur who took some of those relics that indeed had been held by the Cathars prior to their demise and were taken by the Templars down the back side of Montsegur. And indeed, as I say, those relics were actually Cathar relics at that time until they were taken by the Templars down the back side of Montsegur prior to the, you might say, surrender of the last stand of the Cathars at Montsegur.
Thank you for that answer. That's actually where I was going with it. And where did they take all of these relics after they got them off the mountain?
They were taken to several places. They were not kept together, but actually were held in several of the Templars, you might say, living quarters, or they were almost like lodges in a way. They were, you might consider them almost a fortress or a monastery of sorts, because the Templars lived communally in those locations, like brothers in a way. And so those relics were shared between a number of different locations. They were not all kept together, you might say.
Thank you. As to our listeners, time is marching on, and if you have a question for this beautiful guest that we have here, call in with your question, because before you know it, we'll be at the end of the show. It usually works out that way. I'm thinking about Montsegur. And those last days. Historically, I understand that these Cathar, brave Cathars went to their death willingly after they knew that these relics found their way in the backside of the mountain. Do you have anything to add to who the Cathars were, which I think you said, or did you say, that they were cherubim?
I did not say that, but indeed they, along with the Templars, were for the most part incarnated cherubim, as were the Essenes. And there are threads here, as you can see, because those cherubim have come forth at key times, as you understand it. And there have been a number of occasions where they have, you might say, practiced and brought forth and followed the core teachings and understandings that you might describe as Essene teachings and understandings, but in fact were amplified in particular by Yeshua and Mary Magdalene, and given much more power and presence through their work. But those understandings were at the heart of the work of the Templars as well as the Cathars. And of course, these practices, these approaches, the lack of a requirement for a church, the Catholic Church, was an abomination as far as the Catholic Church was concerned. And so it is no surprise that the Pope triggered that crusade to destroy the Cathars, because they were heretics as far as the Church was concerned. They did not require the Church as being some interface between them and their God, because they understood that they simply needed to go within and to open up that connection for themselves. They did not need anyone to interpose between them and that truth. And it is the same reason that the early Christians in Rome were willing to go to their death rather than give up their Christianity, because they knew the truth of themselves. And to deny that truth was simply a price they were unwilling to pay. It was a price that was higher than the price of preserving their own lives. And so they willingly went to their deaths. And it was something that the early Romans simply could not understand, that these people valued the truth of themselves far more than life itself. And this was true of the Cathars and the Templars also. And so that is why the Cathars were willing to go to their death at the end, knowing that truth, knowing that that could not ever be taken from them. So there was a great connection between all of these groups for the same sorts of reasons. And there have been other groups that have practiced these things also, though not so much in the public eye.
Thank you for these revelations. Gina from California is on line one. Welcome, Gina.
Thank you. Yes, I was wondering, I've personally experienced really strong emotional charge related to the early demise of John the Baptist that he says he's reconciled with. However, I've had to do work around reconciling myself with it. So I was wondering if he'd be willing to give any insight into the nature of my relationship with him in that time as a scene, because the charge was so very strong.
Well, that's a wonderful question. There probably is, but let's see what he says.
Thank you.
You were incarnated in that time. You were one of the Essenes, but not just one of the Essenes. You were one of the Essenes that worked closely with me, that followed my work. And so, in a sense, you were deeply wounded by my death. And this is why you carried such a charge around it. It is something that you had not cleared until working with it in this lifetime. And so that is the connection. You were indeed connected to me in that time as one of the Essenes, and indeed, unsurprisingly, you are also one of the incarnated cherubim.
While we're talking about teachings, is it fair to say that the teachings of the Templars, the Cathars, Yeshua, and you were all very similar?
The essence of all of those teachings were indeed very similar. Of course, they were in different times and they were expressed differently. If you looked outwardly, the practices that I was engaged in, as I say, were different from those of Yeshua, but the ultimate essence of what we were teaching, which was to go within and to awaken the truth of who and what you are, that the kingdom of God is within you. And when you activate those skills and abilities and understandings, then you can reconnect with your creator. You can travel the cosmos. There are so many things that you can do with these understandings. And so all of these groups, indeed, at the heart of things, practiced these key things. They also understood the importance of things like the cycles of the moon, the solstices and equinoxes, and the power and possibilities that those moments opened up. Of course, these were not the only groups that understood these things, but certainly we were groups that practiced these understandings.
Thank you. And while we're talking about understandings, why did Yeshua present himself for baptism?
There were two key reasons for this. One was prophecy. The other was that I had built, you might say, a platform in the world of understanding and had told people that there was one to follow. And so the baptism was the agreed way for this, you might say, acknowledgement, that anointing in a way of this great one that was coming forth in the world. So it was really those threads, you might say, that came together to unfold in this manner. Of course, what is considered baptism in your world is really a ritualized washing process, which in so many ways formed a practice that was daily within the Essene community. So it has been put on something of a pedestal, and yes, it was an important occasion, but the process itself, in a way, was not so unusual or extreme as it might seem when one looks at it from your context.
Thank you. Insula from New York is online too. Welcome, Insula. What is your question, dear?
Thank you. My question is, first of all, I just want to say it's such a joy and an honor to be on this call. And
thank you.
My question is with my new, to John the Baptist, with my new age work, what is anything that I could do better, differently, or maybe a different light or focus that I could bring into my work? And also, if I have any connections as well.
Connections with John the Baptist?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
My advice to you, dear one, is to trust yourself more. You, like so many who are doing important and valuable, you might say, healing and spiritual work, doubt the value that you bring. And I simply encourage you to trust yourself more and to do what you feel is right. That is, above all, the most important thing that you can do. Somebody else's advice is of less value in terms of the detail of what you should be doing. The best advice I can give you is to build your trust of yourself, to trust yourself and accept the truth of the beauty and wonder of who and what you are, and allow that to be expressed, and to trust what your intuition tells you about what you should be doing and how you should be proceeding, and trust that. That, above all, is the most powerful thing you can bring to yourself and your work. And in terms of a connection with me, you were not present in that time, though you do have a history of working in what you might consider healing and spiritual traditions over many lifetimes. And this, in a sense, gives you a connection to me because of who I was and what I represented. So there was not a direct connection in that lifetime, but the path you have walked over many lifetimes has given you, in a sense, an affinity with the kind of things that I was doing.
Thank you so much, the two of you. Nathan from New York is on line 3. Welcome, Nathan, and what is your question?
Hello, thought I'd say hello. I get a sense of from John and, of course, Yeshua, that they have this great ability to influence people's consciousness or awareness with a choice of words, with their tone of voice, and also that even if they might be speaking to one person or a small group of people, that they're actually thinking in a sense of affecting great masses of people, great populations. I wonder if maybe John could give a sense of what he might be thinking about when he was giving his sermons or so forth along those lines.
You mean his inner thoughts when he was giving sermons?
Well, this sort of mastery of the process of changing that viewpoint or outlooks of great masses of people with, in those days they had no media, it was just people talking to each other face to face, and it's amazing.
Imagine that.
And now we have their influence remains today. We, you know, they're in the Bible. We still talk about them. It's incredible what was achieved
really
with such simple tools.
Indeed. Well, I'm sure we'll get an interesting answer from that.
There were many elements that were at work in the situation as you describe it. Firstly, speaking for myself, as you understand it, I was brought up in the Essene traditions, and there were a great many skills that were taught as part of that knowledge and understanding and that base of understanding. And so the ability to connect, you might say, mentally and emotionally with a group of people was a skill that grew, you might say, out of those Essene traditions. We were very powerful people. We had a great many skills. For the most part, except towards the end, we were in ways able to protect, for example, our key communities energetically. People who were not Essenes simply found themselves unable to enter those communities. And that would seem very strange to most people today. And so when you consider that you can influence people's thinking or people's reactions in that way, it is not very different to therefore influence them through speaking and through the appropriate focus, focusing your own power within your physical form, drawing into your body all the power that you have access to, the skills you have access to, and then to, in my case, speak with a conviction and a power that was unusual in that time. When you put these things together, it is not surprising, perhaps, to you that we were, or I was, able to influence groups of people in such a powerful manner. In Yeshua's case, his practices were a little different. He had those same Essene basic skills, but he had also augmented those skills greatly by the knowledge that he'd learnt from the Druids and also the tremendous knowledge that he gathered in India, not only from Babaji, but also others. And so he truly was an extraordinary master, a master of the physical in ways that few even today understand. His ability to walk on water, for example, is not such a strange thing when you understand the skills that the man had. He was able to teleport his body if he chose, to bilocate, in other words, be in more than one location at the same time. And so for the most part, he would speak quietly, but his ability to project what he was saying to the ear of those who was listening, and indeed into the mind of those who were listening, was truly quite extraordinary. And this really was the result of the extraordinary skills that he carried. Of course, his demonstrated healing abilities and so on impacted the way that people would be drawn to listen to him. And so there were many factors involved, but the heart of it really was the Essene teachings and understandings, the time in which we lived, and of course the way, in Yeshua's case, those Essene skills were augmented by his studies with the Druids and with the yogis in particular of India.
Thank you, John. Nathan, my sense of it is we don't, when I say we, I mean people in general, don't speak to one another enough and listen to what the other person says before they start thinking of what they want to say. Perhaps you'd agree with that, huh?
Certainly.
Thank you for your question, Nathan. And now we're going to go to Jennifer from California on line one. Welcome, Jennifer. And what is your question?
Carolyn and Richard, thank you for taking my call, and thank you, John the Baptist. I have a question that I feel I have memories of being in a scene and being at the time of Yeshua, and yet I have absolutely no recollection of going through any kind of trauma. And I don't know how that was possible, to live that life and not have suffered. When I consider now, I'm afraid of everything. And I can't picture that I was ever able to do anything heroic. And I just wanted some feedback.
And how are you going to phrase this question, Jennifer? Would you phrase it a little better?
Am I correct in my perception that I was with the Essenes, I was with Joshua, I was with John the Baptist?
Now that's stated in such a way that we can understand it. Thank you.
Jennifer, you were indeed present in that time. You were indeed an Essene. And so you were part of that community, and you knew both Yeshua and me and the other, you might say, key players in all that unfolded in that time.
Thank you.
Yes.
Why am I so afraid and cannot picture that I did anything heroic?
You did not have to do anything heroic to be an Essene, dear one.
Uh-huh. Okay.
You were part of the community. It was such a powerful group, and there were many thousands, indeed, of people involved with that community, and there were many roles. And in a sense, there were public figures, but there were many who were not so public. That does not mean that they did not play important roles, but they were all part of that community, that communal group that formed that powerful base upon which both Yeshua and I stood.
Thank you for that answer.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And also, I think when you're with a powerful group, it's easier to love yourself. What do you think of that?
Very much so. Very much.
Uh-huh. Yes. Well, the last person that was on the line to ask a question has hung up, Richard. And so, did you have a question for our guest tonight?
I don't, actually. I've been very focused on working with him. I'm a blank canvas at the moment.
Oh, my, a blank canvas. Oh, I think that's a first, isn't it?
Oh, no. No, it's quite common when I'm doing these things. It's always a challenge when you ask me if I have a question. I have to change my whole state.
And I would like to comment on your skill when you do this, because it is quite a skill. And Richard is very good at this, speaking to other consciousness, and he teaches it. And he is a marvelous teacher with it also. So, Richard, in case someone wants to know more about how to speak to other consciousness, such as people on the other side, where could they go to get more information?
Yes, we call it Right Brain Magic, and you can find it at rightbrainmagic.com. And for me, you know, just talking about that a little, it's so important to kind of get yourself out of the road and just allow what it is they, whoever I'm connected with, wants to place in my mind, you might say. So, you know, it's so important to get myself out of the road. You can't do this if you keep yourself in the path.
And you do a great job with it, Richard. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd also like to thank our guest for being here. The answers that he gave to these questions were, to me, so amazing, so deep, and so valuable. And I would like to thank him for that also. We don't have much time left on the program, Richard. We're just about to the end. Did you want to say anything?
I have a sense that he might want to say something more. Let me just check.
Okay.
I do wish to wrap up what we have been speaking about here, because I want to emphasize how many of your audience, either listening live tonight or listening to the recording, were present in that time and have a connection to both Yeshua and me, and are here to support the work that is unfolding in this time. Really, the reasons that Yeshua and I came forth were primarily about your time, about preparing for what is unfolding in your time. And it's important to remember this and understand it. And there is a tendency to put on a pedestal what was done in that time. And yet, in truth, the work that you have been doing and the work that you will do in the time that you are in is of far greater importance, in truth, for the, you might say, advancement of humanity than the work that Yeshua and I did. Really, the work that we were doing was in preparation for your time. And so please understand the wonder of who and what you are, and value yourselves in your lives in this time. And if you have trouble doing this, then I encourage you to examine why you don't value yourselves. Usually it is because you have not cleared the wounding that you carry in this lifetime from one source or another. Reconnect with your love for yourselves, dear one, and give up the self-criticism. Accept the truth of the beauty of who and what you are, because that is the truth of things. That is the truth of things, dear ones. Accept this. And do not put me, or do not put Yeshua, on some kind of pedestal relative to you. I know Yeshua would not want that any more than I want that. Be accepting of who and what you are, because it is no less wondrous than the work that we did in our time. And so it is.
Thank you. Would you be willing to come back again and chat with us? Because the information you have brought forth is so fascinating. And some of the things that you have said, I want to know more about. So are you willing to do that?
I would be willing to return if you want me to come.
Thank you so much. And Richard, thank you for your work. Thank you to BBS for supporting our efforts. We do appreciate that. And to all of you who have listened to us either tonight or on the recording, we bless you and send you our love. Good night for now.
Thank you, Carolyn, and good night, everyone.